Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CodeCast Podcast today. My name is Terry Fletcher. So welcome to February. We are here, and actually outside my window right now, it is raining. And you know, I'm in Southern California, so we are happy to have some rain here. So what I'm going to revisit today, I think it's time to really look at Incident 2 rules. We've been focusing so much on telehealth and E&M services and everything during the pandemic, but I'm noticing in my audits that we have some non-compliance and a lot of mistakes when it comes to our APPs, which are also considered our advanced practice providers. And when we talk about that, we're talking about our nurse practitioners, our PAs, or clinical nurse specialists. And I'm getting some really funky questions from, I had an email today from a pharmacist wanting to know how she can bill preventative counseling under office visits. I'm like, well, the short answer there is you can't. The only thing that a pharmacist can do outside of the Part D would be to bill for COVID counseling under a physician supervision, and only the nurse visit applies on that one, and the physician would have to bill it and basically reimburse the pharmacist. And then I have different workers saying that, I shouldn't say workers, okay, different clinicians that are not APPs, really. They're not NPPs either. They're basically, I don't want to call them ancillary staff, but they're staffing that can't bill a payer directly unless they've got some kind of a physician supervision. So for example, you know, a nutritionist, as long as the patient's got chronic kidney disease or they've got something in the diabetic realm, and then the physician bills for it, and again, then they pay them as an employee. So there's a lot of things that we want to focus on, and this is really about E&M services, especially now that we have the new rules. And I want to make sure that as we are navigating those new rules, which I know that are very confusing for a lot of people, I feel like we did all this training and now I'm getting a bunch of questions on it, which is fine. We want you to do it right. So, you know, we want to make sure that we have as much information for you as possible. But getting back to the topic of Incident 2, which means can your mid-level providers provide services and bill it out under your physician license and their provider number? And the short answer is yes, they can, as long as you follow certain rules. And so let's take a look at what those rules are, give you a couple of scenarios so that you can understand if it's billed directly under the APP or if it's billed under the physician's NPI. So one scenario is the APP sees a new patient in the office. The physician is in the office but does not see the patient. Now remember what I said here. What I said was, is it a new patient? And it is a new patient. So when it is a new patient, that has to be billed directly under the APP or NPP as it will, because a new patient is not covered under the Incident 2 rules. Okay, so another one. APP sees an established patient for an ongoing problem for which the physician has established plan of care. However, the patient has a new complaint today. The physician again is in the office but does not see the patient to evaluate this new problem. There is, however, collaboration between the nurse practitioner and the physician. Again, no face-to-face with the patient. Who is that billed under? That's direct under the mid-level or APP. You have to make sure you know that if it's a new patient or if it's a new problem, even if the doctor is on site, it's not billed out under the physician. So let's say the patient's established and they're established to your practice. The physician, let's say, is retired, and or their physician retired within the practice, but another physician has taken over the plan of care, which has not changed. And the APP sees them today. There's a designated supervising physician in the clinic at this encounter. Incident 2 has been met at that point because under the rules for Medicare, every physician is interchangeable under their same tax ID, same specialty. So this is where nothing's changing there. How about an APP sees a patient from a retired physician within the same organization to establish care, and there's a physician that is not in the office? So now they're basically just seeing them under just the NPP. Well, now that's considered to be direct. If there's no physician in the office, then you can't bill that as under another physician. APP sees a patient, established patient within the plan of care established. There is a physician in the office. They don't see the patient, but however, they do co-sign the note. That's billed incident two. And check on the co-signing of the note. That's state to state. So certain states have rules for that, and certain states are a little bit more flexible. How about a nurse practitioner sees an established patient to perform an injection or minor procedure, and it is allowed under the APP scope of practice, and the plan of care for this procedure was previously set by the physician. Can that be billed out under the physician? Yes, it can. Always make sure you know the scope of practice for your providers, your mid-levels, so that you can make sure that it's getting billed appropriately. APP sees an established patient in the office for an ongoing plan of care, no changes, but there's no physician in the office. That's billed directly under the nurse practitioner PA. Now here's one where an APP sees an established patient in the office for a follow-up visit for an ongoing plan of care while the ordering provider is at the hospital, and a different physician within the group, not the patient's physician, is within the suite of offices. Can they bill for it, and can that be the supervising physician? Yes, as long as that physician is there in a capacity of seeing patients and not just administratively. That's one thing that some people miss when they look at the guidelines for a supervising physician under the Incident 2 rules. They don't realize that it can't just be a physician there that's a physician for administrative purposes. You know, a lot of physicians have retired and just decided they want to run the practice and do the administrative work. That is not considered a supervising physician. It's somebody who is also considered a treating physician. So that can be billed out under anybody in the practice. What I would do is I would make sure that you have a rotation, because many physicians right now are getting paid under RVUs. And so they want to make sure that they can also capture some of those if they're going to offer them when that patient's physician isn't available. And you don't just want to slant it to one physician. Also, make sure your scheduler is up to date on what's happening with certain physicians. I had a physician recently say, well, it's not in the schedule that I'm there, but I came in on an off day to see patients. You better have it somewhere, because as an auditor, I'm going to say, let me see your schedule. Was there actually a doctor here? And if I don't see it, I don't believe it. So you have to, like they say, if it's not documented, it's not done. If there's no proof, you can't just take somebody's word for it, because it's now about reimbursement and it's about compliance. An APP sees a patient at the hospital initially, works up the patient with a history and exam, and the physician sees the patient on the same date to complete the medical decision-making and plan of care. Now, here's something that you need to be clear about. When there is a hospital visit, there is no such thing as incident two. Incident two is an office service, or an office regulation, I should say. So it's only when the physician and the nurse practitioner PA are in the office. If it's a hospital situation, then it's called a shared visit. And this can be billed out under the physician or under the nurse practitioner PA. And anytime it can be billed out under the physician, it can be billed out under the nurse practitioner or PA. There's just certain times where it has to be either or, when there's no physician in the clinic or not present. And that's the biggest thing that you also have to keep in mind too, is a lot of patients are thinking, well, I just saw the nurse today. They don't realize a nurse practitioner is actually a mid-level provider that can see patients just as if the physician does. So make sure you're clear with them on that at the initial visit. Otherwise, the patients will say, I'm not paying my copay, and you don't want to do that. But a couple of things to really keep in mind. The physician must be in the suite of offices on site when the nurse practitioner or PA, the APP, is rendering the service to be able to bill out under that physician. Number two, the physician must personally treat the patient on the patient's first visit to the practice, or treat any established patient who comes to the practice with a new medical condition. This is called initiating treatment and initiating care. The APPs may only provide follow-up care under the Incident 2 guidelines. And what we're actually talking about here is getting paid 100% under the physician. Now, you want to track how many times that the APPs are seeing patients. So even though you're going to bill it out under the physician, I would have an internal code of something that you pick by for your coders that input the information so that you can track how much is being seen by the actual physician and how much is being seen by your NPPs and APPs. It's the advanced practice provider. The reason I'm going back and forth on the acronym is because it changed in CPT 3 years ago. And so it's the same thing. It just, they changed the acronym. But I just want to make sure that you're aware so you know how to find out if your APP is profitable and what physicians are not, I don't want to say pulling their weight, but if you're part of a very big organization and one physician has their personal APP and the other physicians aren't using one, and all of a sudden the doctor who has one has this volume that's ridiculous, then you're going to have some conflict within the organization. So it's helpful to know and say, wait, you're only seeing 30% of your patients in office and your NPP is actually seeing 70%. So, you know, we need to make sure we're clear on that, that that's going to come out of your pay, not coming out of the entire pile of money that comes in a reimbursement. So it's just a way to make sure that your physician contracts are equitable and that they're reflective of the actual work that your physician's doing. But I also want to make sure that you're compliant when you deal with Incident 2 rules. Otherwise, it can really get ugly if it's ever audited. That's the first thing that RAC auditors look at, and they ask for that money back. And so it's just really important to make sure that your physicians are involved and that they understand the process. Something came up recently as far as, can we bill Incident 2 under telehealth? Well, unfortunately, the rules say you can, but I'm trying to visualize how you do that. And I think I brought this up after one of the telehealth, not only webinars I did, but I think I did a podcast on it a few months back. And we had a model show us what they were doing in this one office. And they basically had the doctor on an iPad going room to room for where the nurse practitioners and PAs were actually seeing patients via telehealth. And I was like, oh boy, well, isn't that interesting? So I would have actually had somebody filming that without the noise on or without the sound, so that you would have a copy of that, not necessarily listening to each individual medical conversation. That's why I said have it on mute, but you want to be able to show somebody, this is how we did it, because it didn't make any sense to me to be able to do that. So make sure that if you're doing that, that you're backing yourself up with proof that you actually had a physician available should there have been a problem. Because, you know, you have a patient on a Microsoft Teams call or a Zoom call, and you've got a doctor on an iPad from his home, you know, basically being rolled around the office. That to me is just suspect. So be careful under telehealth. I wouldn't do it. So that's just a strong advisory from me. I wouldn't do it. I'd wait till it was in-person visits. Okay, so let's talk about our coding question. So today I have a coding question that is ICD-10. I do like to focus on those when it's the coding questions. And this one is going to be related to proximal supraventricular tachycardia, which is something that is kind of encompasses multiple conditions. So the question came in for one of my Coding Corner clients. Terry, my cardiologist documented proximal supraventricular tachycardia. How should I report this condition? So the ICD-10 code is I-47.1, supraventricular tachycardia. And what this is this refers to a faster than normal heart rate that originates in the atria or in the atrioventricular node. Proximal means the rapid heart rate happens occasionally. So conditions included in the 47.1 are the atrial proximal tachycardia, the AV, proximal tachycardia, that's arterioventricular, and then the reentrant nodal, that's the AV reentrant nodal tachycardia, and then junctional proximal tachycardia. So also make sure that if there's anything about an abnormal pregnancy or an ectopic pregnancy, that then this happens, you have to code that first and then add this secondarily to that diagnosis. But that is your I-10 question for that. Their coding question is brought to you today by Medical Economics, smarter business, better patient care. Follow us for the latest news and viewpoints on primary care, specialty care, and industry happenings in the business of medicine and health IT, ME.com. Also, check out my article in the February issue of Medical Economics, The Future of Telehealth. I'm also going to be talking about that during the podcast that I host for the NSCHBC on February 9th as well. So I seem to be everywhere when it comes to podcasting. So check that out. I'm also in the AAPC Business Monthly for February issue. I did an article for Cardiology 2021 coding updates. So a lot of the new remote patient monitoring codes have come out there. So a couple of personal tidbit this week. I actually wanted to shout out some people that have passed their CPC and CPA exam. So Tara, congratulations. Lourdes, congratulations. I know you worked hard on that. And I really appreciate both of you letting me know and letting me know that the CodeCast has helped you on that. And then just a couple other people that have been sending me some really nice messages lately on the CodeCast and sharing them on LinkedIn and different profiles and platforms. So I appreciate that. And that would be Alyssa, Sam, and Sam's a girl, by the way, Goldie, Lynn, LaTanya, Tammy, Danina, Jen McNamara. I love Jen. She is part of Ozark Coding, and I'm actually going to be presenting for her in March, and she is really does a good job with that. Sonal Patel, I know that you're always there and giving me some really great backup there. So thank you to those ladies and gentlemen. So for everything that you're doing for promoting the podcast, and also congratulations on those newly certified coders. So that is a really tough thing to do, and I'm very proud of you. Also, some fun things. I was nominated for a podcast award. This is my third award in 3 years. And so we also broke the top 100 of the 2021 healthcare business podcast. So we were number 81. So on iTunes, we're consistently in the top 10. But on all the platforms, which I'm on 15 platforms, we hit the top 100. So I'm very proud of that. And thank you to my producer, Joe Kuzma. He works really hard for me on all kinds of different projects, but nothing more than the CodeCast podcast. All right, everyone, make it a great day and a great rest of your week. And I'll talk to you next week on the CodeCast podcast.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer Dasassin Music.